Welcome to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health with your host, Jennifer Tolo. Our discussion on the show today is based on real life, real situations, and most importantly, real people, just like you. Our goal is to help you live a healthier and happier life. Now, here is your host, Jen Tolo.
Good morning and welcome to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm your host, Jen Tolo, RN, owner of Butterfly Family Wellness, a personalized and integrative approach to health and wellness. It is my journey, my life's journey, that has really led me towards this shift from being a medical healthcare worker as an RN, critical care nurse, to the integrative path, because I've really learned on my journey and my path that there are so many other aspects of life that influence your health, not just sort of the pills that we can give and the things that we can do to symptom manage, but it's really our approach to life and from an integrative perspective. And I truly believe that things that happen for a reason. And I have been blessed or challenged, depending on how you look at things, with some life experiences that I truly believe help me help others. And I feel that it is my responsibility to sort of share my experiences. Sometimes I might be sharing more than necessary. But one of these journeys that I've been on and experiences is with one of my children as far as anxiety. And I have suffered from anxiety, and my kids, at least two of the four, have had some anxiety. And today's show is about anxiety and how we approach and handle anxiety from as parents, as teachers, as schools, and as kids. And I had a dear friend of mine who took a workshop from my guest today, Lynn Lyons, and my friend was raving about this workshop. And I'm really happy that my school district is starting to look at this, because it is a really prevalent topic everywhere. And I will certainly ask that question to Lynn as far as if there is an increased prevalence. But I really, at least from a clinical standpoint, but also just an observer in the schools and having a pretty broad range of children from 15 to 6, I have seen increased anxiety all around. And I have seen that these are sort of the buzzwords, the anxiety, stress, pressure that we're hearing, especially relating to kids in school today. I know that I'm on a special education parent advisory council, and one of the things that we did is sent out a survey to the community and asking about what are their main concerns. And I was just sharing with Lynn that there was an overwhelming prevalence of anxiety, whether it's from a child with special needs or just, you know, a child in the school system. But anxiety seems to be an overwhelming concern for a lot of people. And I was very excited to stumble upon Lynn Lyons, who is a psychotherapist up in New Hampshire. And she gives talks and workshops all around, but she's also written a book, a couple of books, but Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents, 7 Ways to Stop the Worry Cycle and Raise Courageous and Independent Children. That's one of her books. She also has a book that is relating to teenagers, and it's Casey's Story. I believe that's it. You'll have to clarify that. But Lynn, I'm very excited to have you with us and to talk about this really timely topic of anxiety. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm very happy that you could. I know it's a busy time for a lot of people, so thank you for taking the time to share this. I do know that, at least to me, it seems that the prevalence of anxiety, or at least I just seem to see so many kids with anxiety. And I think the repercussions mm-hmm. of some of the anxiety is the drug use. And it's sort of self-medicating, I think, some people. But mm-hmm. you also hear kids talk about being stressed and being overwhelmed. And parents, I know our school district just showed the movie Race to Nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and I don't know if this is, and this is where I would love for us to touch on. But I don't know if this is society that is creating this, if it is the way that we are approaching and handling sort of basic anxiety, if the anxiety is the same, but it's the way that we're handling it. I don't know. What is your take on this anxiety and this increased anxiety that we're starting to see?
Well, I think that the research is a little bit, people have different thoughts about that in terms of the actual prevalence of anxiety disorders. And one important distinction to make is that there's sort of the clinical anxiety disorder that's diagnosed if somebody has, a debilitating condition that sort of gets in the way of them functioning. There's a difference between someone who, for example, gets anxious when they're flying. I was sitting next to somebody just the other day. I was flying back from across the country. But she flies a lot, so she doesn't like when the plane takes off, and she doesn't like when the plane lands, but she gets on airplanes. And that's sort of the normal run-of-the-mill anxiety and worry that people have.
Right.
And then there's anxiety disorders, which interfere with your ability to do things that you need to do or that you're supposed to do or that you really want to do.
Right.
And whether or not there's a big increase in those diagnoses is really known. Or sort of debated. What we do know is just general worry, and this is where the parenting stuff comes in, is that worrying about what's going to happen, having an extremely anxious focus on what the future is going to look like, what achievement looks like, whether or not you're going to be able to handle the challenges of life, that is definitely on the increase, and it's definitely a cultural thing.
I've read a bunch talking about how anxiety is future focused, whereas depression is past. Is
correct?
Past
focused. In general, that's an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Anxiety's calling card is what if.
Right.
And worry is really sort of the thoughts and kind of how we generate, our imagination and our worry. And then anxiety is technically sort of the physiological reaction, what your body does, those anxious symptoms that people have, your heart pounding or your hands sweating or your stomach feeling upset or getting migraine headaches and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, now, so worry is certainly on the rise, just in terms of the information that we're exposed to. I turned on the news this morning. At 7 o'clock, I turned on CBS News this morning, and if you saw the news this morning, there were three big stories that were horrific to hear about, and that's what we're exposed to. None of them were in my community. In fact, two of them are on the other side of the world, and yet because we have such access to everything that happens, it makes parents worry about the safety of their children.
It's funny. I remember as a child saying to my father, God, the world is so, so terrifying and there's danger all around and crime all around. And my father said, have you ever experienced crime yourself? Have you ever witnessed crime yourself? And he said, the statement that you're having is because of what you're seeing on TV, but in your world, you've never been exposed to this other than on television. So it was, but my father was that kind of person where he would really take the time to explain that.
As opposed to another parent who might say, look, it's really important when you walk to the bus stop in this town where there's really a very low crime rate, it's very important that you pay attention, that you don't talk to strangers, that anybody that you know could be a dangerous person. And that's what we see in terms of how worry is sort of passed down intergenerationally. It is really based on one's perception of the world and how we communicate that to our children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny, in my own family, I have, one of my kids who's nine is, struggles with the whole worried that something's going to happen to myself or my husband. And that's a very normal, developmentally appropriate worry. And then I have my 12-year-old who had a stroke at birth, and he early on has always been a very anxious child, like just tends to want to be in control of everything. And that's sort of his way of coping with some of that anxiety. And it's, the unexpected, the anticipatory anxiety. And when he also has learning disabilities, and we started to see the anxiety really play a big role as far as school, like what you were talking about with the stomach aches. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And it started with separation anxiety, But mm-hmm. we realized when he was not able to sort of do what all the other kids were doing, like go for a play date or go to a birthday party or, you know, just things that the kids his age were able to do, go to school and separate from me. Mm-hmm. We realized, okay, we really do need to get some help here. So mm-hmm. I definitely have sort of both spectrums in my family, mm-hmm. Regarding that. But I fully believe, and I was sharing with you before, as a parent, I completely understand wanting to make things easier and the difficulty of seeing your child struggle. And, this one son that I'm talking about, every part of his life has been a struggle because, of his disability from birth. And mm-hmm. so the disservice that I know and I own that I did was trying to sort of get ahead of him on his path and sweep the path and make things easier mm-hmm. and sort of make things like as put him in a bubble almost. And I realized later on that that was not the way to handle things, because what I did was I just stopped him from getting some tools in his toolbox on how to cope.
Yeah, well, and so it's very intuitive to do that. It's very intuitive to want to step in and stop your child from struggling, which is whether or not you have a child with a physical issue, whether or not you have a child who's very anxious, if you're very anxious, being able to sort of step back and let your child tolerate unexpected things, tolerate uncertainty, that's mm-hmm. the main skill that anxious children lack. And so when they have trouble with that uncertainty, and it's actually the main skill that anxious adults lack as well. So the goal is to try and provide certainty. Right. Anxiety wants certainty and comfort. That's its whole gig. That's its whole agenda. So when you have a child, be they anxious or not, in order to equip them to move into the world, if you're doing all of that work for them, then they have a harder time managing independently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was interesting because we started seeking some professional help for my son earlier on when he was around 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. But we really started to see these panic attacks, if you will, in kindergarten when school mm-hmm. started.
Yeah.
And when we went to the doctor, one of the things that he had said, he'd sort of taken a history and he said, anxiety is familial. It is mm-hmm. kind of handed down. And I know when I was a child, I had panic attacks. There was a specific event that happened that triggered some panic attacks with me. And I had to go on some medication and then sort of slowly come off the medication and behavioral therapy sort of thing. That for me, it was being left someplace without somebody with a car. And I was saying, well, there was an event that triggered it. He said, no, you've always had the anxiety. It was just, that something brought it out more. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the familial aspect and hereditary nature of anxiety?
Well, there's definitely a genetic component to it. The mm-hmm. strongest genetic component would be for obsessive compulsive disorder. We know that in terms of that being passed down in families, very likely that if a child has obsessive compulsive disorder, that there is a parent and or a grandparent that also struggles with that disorder. So we know that a child can have a predisposition for that. And we know that there are certain children are more sensitive. We know that there is a temperament called behavioral inhibition. Jerome Kagan from Harvard has been studying that for years and years and years. And he can predict, through his research, he could predict based on certain factors which children were much more likely to grow up and have anxiety. But the flip side of that, too, is the research also is very clear that when parents can intercede and teach different skills to children, that it's not a given. So the tough part about this is that we say that there's a genetic component, but that means that if you have a genetic component and then you are anxious and it's been reinforced, there is such a combination of nature and nurture that supports mm-hmm. it intergenerationally.
Absolutely.
And there is very clear research that when parents do things differently, that kids can really move out of this sort of familiar pattern. I will tell you that my strong experience and my strong bias right now is that in this country in particular, there is an overemphasis on the biomedical model of both anxiety and depression. The term chemical imbalance, for example, has never been proven. There is no research. There is not a single study. You talk to the experts that have studied this for years and years and years. There is no evidence that there is that depression and or anxiety is caused by something called a chemical imbalance. And so we really need to step back and say that certainly there are people who are at risk based on their genes. There are certainly people that are at risk based on their upbringing. But these are things that are teachable and changeable. And it's even more important for the people who might have a genetic predisposition to learn skills rather than being told there's something wrong with you and here's a medication or this is just how you are. That message is very, very pervasive in our culture right now.
Yes,
and it really is very harmful.
Well, it goes along with the whole symptom management, you know, the sort of, well, here's a pill to get rid of that instead of working through a feeling and an emotion. I know that with my son, when we were looking at some of the research, because there's not a ton of research based on neonatal strokes, but when we were looking at and talking to the neonatal stroke expert at Children's Hospital, our doctor, one of the things that they were finding is a lot of these kids did have higher incidence of anxiety. And just listening to you, I'm thinking, I wonder how much of that is us parenting them differently because they're,
well,
quote unquote,
yeah, it,
broken
it could be,
or different.
Yeah, and that absolutely could be the case. Here's the trap that you fall into. You're a new mom. You've got this baby who has had this stroke at birth, and somebody says to you, "Look, he is very likely to have anxiety as he grows up." This is and so rightly or wrongly. You begin to, or not even wrongly really, but just because you're protective and loving of your child, you begin to see him, then the way that you manage that child will be different. And we really, that's why my strong focus, my passion is how do we interrupt the intergenerational transmission of these things instead of saying, well, it's just this biological thing and it's passed down in families and this is how we are. Yeah. So we do the same thing with a lot of things. We do it with obesity. We do it with heart disease. We do it
absolutely
with addictions. Yeah.
Right. And I think sometimes when somebody says that there's a genetic component to it, then people think, well, there's really nothing I can do then. So when we get back from our break, we're about to take a short break. And when we get back from the break, I would love to talk about this worry cycle and you touch on maybe three things that make anxiety stronger, and then what can we as parents do and adults do instead, which I think are really important things. And I think it's I'm a huge believer in tools in the toolbox. And I think some of us learn, like you said, through our life experiences, how to manage certain things, or we sort of only know one way on how to deal with anxiety or how to deal with challenges. And I think it's important that even if we don't have a tool in our toolbox, we can get the tool in our toolbox. We just have to know where to look. So I encourage people to check on during our break to take a look at Lynn Lyons' website, Lynn Lyons, New Hampshire. So NH, LynnLyonsNH.com, and connect with her, maybe bring her to your school system. And take a look at my website, www.butterflyfamilywellness.com, and connect with both Lynn and myself on our websites. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And when we come back at the break, from the break, Lynn and I are going to talk about different things that we do that makes anxiety stronger and things that we can do instead. So please join us after this break.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Spread your wings and fly into health with Butterfly Family Wellness. We offer customized healthy living plans for adults, children, schools, and communities. This includes various levels of personal coaching, holistic health counseling, cooking classes, workshops, Reiki healings, and attunements. Call 978-290-1938 or visit butterflyfamilywellness.com to take a personalized approach to family health and well-being and take control of your health. Visit butterflyfamilywellness.com or call 978-290-1938 today.
How many times have you heard this?
I'm sick and tired of feeling sick and tired.
You are what you eat.
I've tried every diet.
Diets don't work.
It's time to stop this kind of madness and start thinking and feeling empowered to change your health. Tune in to The Raw Truth with Chef Sharon Fraser. Join us weekly for thought-provoking conversations with world-renowned experts in the food, medical, holistic, sports medicine, chiropractic, and naturopathic health sciences. The Raw Truth airs live every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
You are listening to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. To reach Jennifer Tolo or her guest expert today, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, let's get back to the program.
Hello and welcome back to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I'm your host, Jen Tolo, and I am joined by Lynn Lyons, psychotherapist and author of Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents, 7 Ways to Stop the Worry Cycle and Raise Courageous and Independent Children. We are talking about anxiety today, and one of the things that Lynn had mentioned is some of the things that we do as parents, we inadvertently are exacerbating the anxiety. So I would love for Lynn to share with us some of the 3 things, the most common things that we do to actually make anxiety stronger, and give us some tips on what we can do instead.
Okay, well, so one of the things that the biggest mistakes that parents make is that, and a lot of therapists actually make this mistake too, and schools certainly make this mistake, is that the goal is to get rid of the anxiety.
Yes.
The goal is to eliminate the symptoms and certainly to try and eliminate the triggers.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we really want to focus on with kids and with families is that you really have to expect that anxiety is going to show up. Really have to expect that it's a normal part of life whenever you're stepping into a new challenge, whenever you're doing something that makes you feel uncertain or unsure. It really is normal for you to have some doubt. Worry wants certainty. It wants to know everything.
Right.
And what we have to help children embrace is that not only is that impossible, it's exhausting, and it really, that gives anxiety control. So the first thing we want to do is we just want to expect it. It's a normal part of life. It's a normal part of being human. It's a strongly biological process that involves fight or flight. It's in most animals. And so when we say to kids, you have to be calm to do this, right, if we focus on relaxation, if we focus on being calm, all of that actually makes anxiety stronger. So we want to take an allowing stance rather than an eliminating stance. And then the second thing is we want to make sure that kids are capable of handling and tolerating uncertainty. So instead of trying to get ahead of a kid and give them all the information, sometimes it's called scaffolding, saying, okay, so this is what the day is going to look like. First, we're going to do this. First, we're going to do that. We're not going to eliminate planning. We're not going to say, we're going to go on a trip and just see what happens.
Right.
But when a parent is anxious and or a child is anxious, we overdo that. So, for example, many 504 plans will say, make sure that the child knows exactly what's going to happen next. We keep them apprised of the schedule. And that feeds into anxiety's belief, anxiety's desire to know everything and to feel like that's a necessary part of living your life.
I would, and that is exactly what they do with my son. One of the big things that they stress, the schools and even doctors that we've gone to, is to prepare and eliminate the uncertainty. That's funny. I mean, not funny, but...
but it's not, that's not surprising to me. I hear that all the time. And as I said, 504 plans, accommodation plans at schools, many, many therapists, pediatricians, it's all about making sure that the child knows what's going to happen, because the goal is to not trigger the anxiety.
Right. And is that basically just to maintain order, you know, to make sure that it doesn't take time to sort of handle somebody's, you know, panic attack
Correct.
Or whatever, if the anxiety is over the top.
Right.
Right.
And that's why it seems to make sense, because you really are just trying to keep the train on the tracks. Everybody's
right.
got to get to work or get to school or get to sleep. But the things that we do that work in the short term actually make anxiety stronger over the long term. The thing that anxiety says, the statement that anxiety says is blah, 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 and you can't handle it.
Yes.
And we can put
yes, you're
anything
right. Very
in
good
there.
Point. Right.
We can put anything in there. So the third thing is that what a child is worrying about is really not as important as everybody thinks it is. The process by which we develop and maintain our worry and anxiety is what the issue is. So when that person said, when you said, well, this thing happened to me and that's what made me anxious, and that person said to you, well, no, actually, that wasn't what made you anxious, right? The thing that happened was not the issue. And that person was spot on.
Right.
Because the content changes. Anxiety runs the life cycle. And the content changes based on your developmental age. Like you were saying, your 9-year-old is afraid something might happen to mom or dad.
Right.
6-year-olds worry about different things compared to 12-year-olds, compared to 30-year-olds. And so when you focus on changing the content, making sure that the content is okay, you're missing out on an opportunity to teach your child a very important message, which is unexpected things happen, and you may not like them, but you can handle them. And anxiety's message is just the opposite. I can't handle it. I can't handle it. And so schools and families work very hard to change the environment in order to accommodate anxiety's demands.
Right. That's an excellent point. When you were talking about the things that we do as far as the scaffolding or mm-hmm. trying to end anxiety, I'll give an example of myself. So mm-hmm. an event, I was in an airplane accident when I was 18 years old, going mm-hmm. on my way to college. I was in an airplane. Well, we didn't crash or anything, but the engine caught on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So slightly after that, maybe, you know, not right away, I got right back on a plane and everything was fine. But probably the next time I flew, I mm-hmm. started to find myself, you know, my heart rate would start to speed up and I would start to, you know, have sweaty palms, and I'd start to sort of think about, like, what if, like, the whole anxiety. Mm-hmm. And now, given all the tools that I've learned, a lot of breathing techniques, a lot of mindfulness, when I get on a plane, in fact, this just happened last weekend, I was flying down to Virginia with one of my older sons, and I, for some reason, started to get a little initiated with my anxiety, just a little bit, my mm-hmm. speed up heart rate. And I literally sat there, and I always say a prayer before I fly, and I was talking myself through it. Okay, you're fine. You're on this plane. Everything's fine. Take some deep breaths. Just calm, just to slow my heart rate down, mm-hmm. which is, I think, that physiologic response, at least in myself and from clients and just friends that I've experienced and that have anxiety. It's that physiologic response that sort of can trigger more anxiety. Because
mm-hmm,
people
right.
think, okay, well, I'm dying or something's happening
right,
or the end
right.
of the world is coming. And so it's that some of those techniques to sort of calm that physiologic response. For me, I find that to be helpful. But from, I guess, what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, the physiologic responses are normal and not necessarily don't try to manage those physiological responses, but basically just understand it's normal.
Right. I would go so far as to say sometimes we even coach them to get worse. So on purpose, what happens when you're sitting on that plane and your heart rate goes up, if you say to yourself, oh, my heart rate is going up. Okay. So I need to do my breathing and calm my heart rate down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's one response. What happens then if your heart rate doesn't calm down?
Right.
So then you say, oh my gosh, my heart rate's not coming down. Now, right. then you've just given another message. It's a very cyclical thing.
Right.
So the research, for example, on panic attacks for mm-hmm. many, many years, for several years, has said they no longer do breathing exercises. Because what I am saying and what Reed Wilson and I wrote the book together, and Reed is fabulous at this, what we are saying is we are going to expect and accept that this is a normal part of life, knowing what happens physiologically, and I describe it to kids very simply and very clearly, is that this is going to happen. It's okay if your heart rate goes up. It's okay if your tummy feels a little funky. It's okay yeah. if your hands are clammy. You're going to move forward anyway. Mm-hmm. And when we focus on teaching relaxation and breathing skills, and we don't address the cognitive process of worry, which is basically saying, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, I can't handle this,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult, particularly for kids that are younger. An anxiety response is a jolt of energy. It's adrenaline. It's otherwise known as epinephrine shooting through your body.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell a 9-year-old to take deep breaths and calm down, really, not only does it not often work, but it's just not adequate.
Right.
And that's an interesting thing. Is that, and you know, I was just out at the Brief Therapy Conference, and I was talking to Ron Siegel, who's a huge mindfulness guy.
Yeah.
And he said the biggest misunderstanding about mindfulness is that it's supposed to make you calm.
Right. No, it's being present in the moment. Right.
You what?
I said, no, mindfulness is being present in the moment and aware of what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And accepting
right.
that you're going to take your mindfulness, as he says, take your mindfulness into the fire. That it's okay to feel anxious. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel angry and to be able to cope with all of those human experiences. And what our culture supports so strongly right now, and Reed and Ron and I were talking about this, is that elimination of symptoms. And it just doesn't work if you focus solely on relaxation and breathing, and that's what so many people do when it comes to anxiety.
Right, including myself.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
So you just want to say instead, and it's a paradoxical response. But it's interesting. If you were sitting on that plane, right, and you're saying, all right, I'm going to do a little experiment. So my heart is starting to pound a little bit. I'm going to try and make my heart rate go up, right? So I'm going to take my pulse right now. My pulse, okay, my pulse is 82. All right, well, that's fine, you know. All right, I'm going to see right now if I can make my pulse go to 110. All right, let's go. I'm going to try and do it. Do you know what would happen?
It would calm down, probably.
Probably, right? Yeah. Or even if it went up to 110, you would say, oh, great, I just did it. Fantastic. Which is a very different response than, oh, my gosh, my heart rate is going up. I think I'm going to have a heart attack.
I'm going to die. Right.
Yeah,
yes,
I'm going to die.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I'll try that on Tuesday. I'm flying on Tuesday.
All right. Yeah, you can try. You can say, I'm going to get on this plane. I'm going to see how high I can make my heart rate. I'm going to see how clammy I can make my hands.
Right.
And it's an interesting thing because it's that resistance.
Yes.
It's that, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, I have to stop this. Oh, my gosh, what's going on with my body? That's
right.
What actually makes the anxiety stronger. When we stop resisting.
Right.
And when we even start inviting it, let's go. Let's go. Let's see. Let's see how anxious I can get. Let's see how big a lump I can make in my throat. Let's see how big a knot I can make in my stomach.
Right.
The body gets that very primitive part of your brain is not getting a danger message.
Right.
And that's the issue.
So if you have been sort of with your children or in schools, whether it's teachers doing this or parents doing this, and the message that we have been giving is, okay, let's calm down. Let's take some deep breaths and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would you suggest transitioning to something different, a more positive way?
Taking deep breaths is fine. It's a reboot. It's a regroup. It's a way to sort of get yourself so that you can move into the cognitive part of it. The very simple thing and the immediate thing that parents and teachers can start doing is we want to externalize that worry. We want to take it out. We want to, instead of saying, I'm worried, we want to change our language so that we start saying, oh, my worry is really bossing me around today.
I like that.
Worry says the same thing over and over and over again, and when we stop treating it like it's breaking news, we change our relationship with it. Oh, whenever I have to take a spelling test, my worry shows up and says, oh, you're not going to be able to take this spelling test, Lynn, and then I have to have a different response to it. So right. You get on this plane, your worry's going to show up. So let's say we decide to call your worry Petunia, right? Okay, so Petunia, your worry shows up, and you get on the plane, and Petunia says, oh my gosh, Jen, we're getting on a plane. Did you remember what happened that time, you know, when you were 18? And oh gosh, planes do crash. I hope you realize that. They're talking about the safety right now, right? And you turn right. to Petunia and say, well, how predictable. Right. Of course you're going to show up, and this is the same thing you say all the time. So we want to externalize that worry, and we just want to talk to it. And we want to get some distance from it and have a different response.
I like that. It's funny, whenever the flight attendants start doing their safety spiel, my husband always looks at me and goes, you don't even need to watch this. Been there, done that. I'm good.
Yeah, and there's just sort of, there's playfulness. The other right. thing, too, is that how we connect to past experiences, how we sort of tell our story, right? So using you as an example, you have a narrative about what happened to you on a plane.
Right.
And you tell that story. And when you get on a plane, you tell that story to yourself. And when they do the safety stuff, your husband turns to you. And that story has become a nice, well-worn pathway in your brain. And wouldn't it be interesting if you started telling yourself a different story about it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I always say, I'm still here.
Yeah. Part of you says that, and then the other part of it says, well, can we revisit that experience, right. please? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I like that. I'm definitely going to try that. Yeah. We are about to take a short break, and one of the things that I would love to discuss when we get back, the things that you're saying is basically one of the things that I think is lacking in our kids is accountability and sort of dealing with the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like we've discussed, parents oftentimes try to make everything okay and try to pave the way for our children. But mm-hmm. I think in order to create, as you talk about, cognitive flexibility mm-hmm. and adaptability, I would love when we get back from the break to really focus on that and talk about the things that we parents can do to create cognitive flexibility in our home, and then things that teachers can do to create cognitive flexibility in the schools. So again, during the break, please feel free to check out Lynn Lyons' website, lynnlyons.com, and my website, butterflyfamilywellness.com, and connect with us, sign up for my newsletter, check out the different packages that we have, great for the new year, and join us after the break where we talk about a little bit more about anxiety, but things that parents can do to sort of create empowered, healthy, flexible children. Stay tuned.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Spread your wings and fly into health with Butterfly Family Wellness. We offer customized healthy living plans for adults, children, schools, and communities. This includes various levels of personal coaching, holistic health counseling, cooking classes, workshops, Reiki healings, and attunements. Call 978-290-1938 or visit butterflyfamilywellness.com to take a personalized approach to family health and well-being and take control of your health. Visit butterflyfamilywellness.com or call 978-290-1938 today.
Are you facing unexplainable struggles with your health? Listen to someone who has been there. Join host Teresa Jungling each week for Living Natural Today, Out with Toxins, In with Your Health, as she interviews experts who will shed light and offer practical advice on how you can minimize toxins in your food, home, personal care products, and more. Living Natural Today, Out with Toxins, In with Your Health, is heard live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You
are listening to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. To reach Jennifer Tolo or her guest expert today, please call into our show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, let's get back to the program.
Hello and welcome back to Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. I am Jen Tolo, your host, and I am joined by Lynn Lyons, psychotherapist and author of Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents, Seven Ways to Stop the Worry Cycle and Raise Courageous and Independent Children. And Lynn was really giving some great tips this last segment about what we do as parents that actually we think that we're helping, but we're actually making the worry worse. And she had some very, very salient points. And one of the things that really brought up for me was, as a parent, a lot of times we don't like to see our child uncomfortable. We don't like to see our child struggle. And I know, you know, with my four kids, I have some kids, some of mine, well, they're all completely different, but some of mine are better at problem solving than others. And one of my sons has a lot of anxiety. I will own some of this. He is definitely the one that I have tried to ease the path a little bit earlier on in his life. And it's, you know, over the past couple of years, I've really found that I'm not helping him. I'm not helping him gain some tools for his toolbox to handle life, that I'm actually making him less accountable, less flexible, and less able to problem solve. So I'm curious, Lynn, you had said that in the break, you had said that a lot of anxious kids that you've seen are lousy problem solvers.
When you look at the traits of anxious children, they score not so great on independent problem solving and not so great on autonomy. And they become very reliant on other people solving problems for them. They can become, the anxiety is a step back problem. It's an avoidance problem.
Yes.
They become passive. It's an I can't do it, I'm going to hold back. And that's where parents and teachers sort of rush in to kind of help them. Now, it's not that we don't want to help kids. It's not that we're saying, hey, you're on your own, buddy. But think of it in terms of the skills that an anxious child needs. What they are lacking is what then we have to promote. And if they are lacking the ability to independently problem solve, you have to teach them how to do that.
Yes. I mean, it's funny because as you're saying this, I'm thinking my son, who has the learning disabilities along with the anxiety, was really having some trouble this year in school. He just started middle school and he was really struggling and having some trouble. And he was doing okay at school, but at home he would just really just lose it and was having a lot of anger issues, not doing his homework, not being accountable. One of the things with my son is when he starts to get anxious or he starts to get uncomfortable is he tries to control. Mm-hmm. And then that creates sort of a whole another dynamic. But when I was talking to the teachers, one of the things that they came up with was sort of lessening the workload.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, well, maybe that was not the right, although he seems to feel a little bit more confident. But that's sort of the struggle constantly is, okay, how much are we sort of letting him not do? And how much are we kind of removing obstacles for him and removing challenges for him? And
The way to differentiate that is that when you are stepping in and trying to help an anxious child, you've got to be focused on their own skill building.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to, when I'm working with a child, I'm always thinking, what does this kid do well? So what are the resources that we can help with? And what do they not know how to do, and how do I teach it? Situations.
Yeah.
You know, you said your son has some learning issues.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is not to overwhelm them.
Right.
And we want to develop their sense of autonomy and their sense of confidence. But there has to be, in any accommodation plan for an anxious kid, there has to be a skill-building component to it. rather than just an avoid and escape component.
Yes.
And in all the years that I've been doing this, I think I've seen 3 504 plans that actually pull that off.
Wow.
Most 504 plans are about how can we take away the stressor? How can we create a more comfortable learning environment? And that sounds good on the surface, but there's no skill building.
Right.
And so if we are saying, imagine that anxiety is a cult leader and it has rules. And mm-hmm. one of its rules is I cannot handle things. I cannot feel uncomfortable. And when there is a challenge that comes my way and that triggers my anxiety, someone must remove that. That's
yes.
one of anxiety's rules.
Right.
If you are doing those things, anxiety is thanking you for your help. And so if we take your son as an example, he's stressing out about homework and feeling like he can't manage things. Well, then the skill we want to help him develop is when you feel like you are overwhelmed with your homework, how can you step back and talk to your worry in a different way? Whenever you have worry, whenever you have homework, your worry is going to show up and say, you can't do this, you can't do this. It says, you're right, you can't. Let's pull that, let's take that away from you. He never develops the skill of saying, well, you know what? It's difficult, but I'm going to take it a step at a time. I'm mm-hmm. going to manage these uncomfortable feelings. I'm going to manage these sensations. I know what they are, and I'm going to keep moving forward. The only way an anxious brain relearns is to be put into the situation that triggers the anxiety and have an experience that is contrary to what the worry has declared. And every
Absolutely.
Time we take kids out of those situations, we are reinforcing what the anxiety is saying is you're incapable, you're incompetent. We can do it in a very supportive way, but it has to be skill-based, not avoidance-based.
So what can parents and teachers do then to create that cognitive flexibility and skill building?
Yeah, so one very kind of fun thing that I have a lot of families do is to create a wall of flexibility in the house. So you pick a piece of wall, you know, a pantry door, a bathroom door, mm-hmm. a plate someplace in the kitchen. You get a whole bunch of fun, colorful sticky notes. And every time the child, or maybe the whole family has to do it, every time somebody handles something with flexibility, you just jot down a few words and you put that sticky note up on the wall. And then when they earn 5 sticky notes or 10 sticky notes, then you get to order pizza or you get to watch mm-hmm. a movie together or you get to have something fun.
Right. So that's great. That's one of the things actually in one of my sons, he's in a group program, mm-hmm. I have a boys group sort of program, and that's one of his goals is be more flexible.
Right. Right.
So perfect.
So when you see them being more flexible, you want to, and it can be in little ways or in big ways, you know, oh, I love to use the blue bowl for my cereal. Well, the blue bowl is in the refrigerator with somebody's leftover chili in it, so you're going to have to use the red bowl.
I don't want the red bowl.
Right. Yeah, right, right. Well, I know you don't want the red bowl, right? So it's not about, you don't have to love the red bowl. You just have to say, I can handle the red bowl. It's like fire drills at school. Right. How many accommodation plans have I seen where kids are afraid of fire drills, and so they remove the child from the classroom ahead of time, bring them outside, the fire drill goes off, and then the rest of the class joins them. The message you are giving to that child is you can't handle fire drills. And they say, well, I have sensory issues and I don't like the loud noise. Well, then when you hear the fire drill, which is designed to startle you, by the way, because if it were a little chirping, then nobody would do anything, it's perfectly fine for you to just put your hands over your ears and march out with your class. Figure right. out how you can tolerate a situation that is uncomfortable but manageable, rather than what adults are doing is this situation is making him uncomfortable. We're going to remove him, which supports the message that this is unmanageable and you're not capable of handling it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great.
And over and over again, staying out of the content is so important, and that's a really hard thing for parents to do. So if somebody says, Mom, I'm afraid I'm going to throw up, and then Mom wants to say, no, you're not going to throw up. You're fine. Let's take your temperature. Let's check and see, right? But if you have an anxious child, you know that those questions and that need for reassurance is endless. They are a bottomless pit. So rather than offering that external reassurance, which is what most people do, it strengthens anxiety, again, you want to step back and say, well, that sounds like your worry bossing you around. What can you say back to your worry? How can you show your worry that you can handle things rather than me stepping in and fixing it for you? So it's a very simple shift in the language that you use as a parent.
Yeah.
Instead of changing, I'm afraid of dogs. Well, before we go over to Sally's house, we'll call and make sure that they put Buster in the basement so he doesn't scare you, right? Well, of course worry is going to say, oh, you're afraid of dogs. You can't handle it, right? Well, what can we do? We're going to take worry in, and you're going to have a different conversation with your worry, and you're going to tolerate it. You're going to feel uncomfortable, but let's see what you can learn about handling dogs rather than let's see what we can show you about avoiding dogs.
Yes. Wow, that's absolutely. And I love the concept of externalizing and sort of calling worry sort of as if it's your frenemy.
Yeah. Oh, and I have parents talk to the worry, you know, parents. So they're trying to get out to school, and the kid is saying, but I don't want to go to school today because I'm afraid we have music class and the music teacher is mean or it's too loud or whatever. And the parent can say, hold on a second. I got to have a chat with your worry here. Okay. So listen, worry. You're kind of giving us a tough morning here. You're bossing my little friend Joshua around. We need to get to school. I need to get to work. So you can sit and chit chat all you want, but Joshua and I, we're not teaming up with you anymore. Right? And then that way you're aligning with your child. You feel connected to your kid. But you're giving the very clear message is worry is not in charge of this family.
Absolutely. Well, Lynn, you have given us some amazing points. And I'll tell you what, this is something that I am going to start right away as far as how I'm going to handle worry. And I'm going to call worry my little frenemy and have chats with worry.
Yeah.
Petunia, whatever. I'll just give it a name. Bring it outside.
When you're not playing, you'll get a chance to practice.
You will be right there in my head. I will be picturing your face when I call Petunia. Sorry, but I will.
When you were at the beginning, you were talking about the book Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents. The companion book that we wrote to that book is called Playing with Anxiety.
Yes.
And it's for kids, at Playing with Anxiety, Casey's Guide for Teens and Kids.
Yes.
It's for tweeners, really, independent readers, but certainly younger kids can read it with mom and dad. And it follows the same 7 steps that we teach in the parenting book. It's just through the voice of Casey, who's a 14-year-old girl, and she's got a little bit of sass to her, and kids enjoy it.
Perfect. Sounds like a great Christmas present.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
You're so welcome. My pleasure.
I really encourage people to connect with Lynn and bring Lynn into the school systems, because the more people that get these tools and the more we can shift things, I think the more empowered and happier our children will be.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much, and I wish you very happy holidays to you and
thank you.
The listeners. And again, go check out www.lynnlyonsnh.com and connect with Lynn. And follow her. Do you have a newsletter, Lynn, that people could, or something that they could sort of follow and stay connected?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. It's Lynn Lyon Psychotherapist and Anxiety or something like that. But if you put in Lynn Lyon Psychotherapist, you'll find my business Facebook page. You can sign my newsletter on there, or you can just shoot me an email through my website and request to be put on the list. And I send out articles and where I'm going to be and my schedule and all that stuff.
Terrific. Well, thank you again for joining us, and thank you, listeners, for joining us today. And I hope that you stay tuned and follow us next week while we continue to help you spread your wings and fly into health. Be well, everyone.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Spread Your Wings and Fly into Health. Jennifer Tolo invites you to listen again next Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, for another edition on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Have a healthy week.